We want you to go, if you can, to hereandnow.org to see some incredible paintings. In one, a water bird floats upside down near a drawing of the botulism toxin that killed it. Another shows a massive factory, glowing yellow sky next to turquoise waters. In all, there are 5 large paintings and dozens of smaller ones by New York artist Alexis Rockman for a new show commissioned by the Grand Rapids Art Museum opening in January before traveling the country. These are ecological, historical, just plain amazing tales of the Great Lakes. Is that a giant squid? And what does this have to do with the movie The Life of Pi? We'll get to that, but Alexis Rockwell joins us now. So huge oils, but also watercolors, and some of the pieces include materials from the Great Lakes themselves?
They're exclusively made with those things. There's nothing else other than matte medium to hold it together. So part of what I've been doing for over 20 years is going to a place like, for instance, the Sleeping Bear Dunes in Lake Michigan, and grabbing some sand and putting in a Ziploc bag and making some notes about things that I have seen there, and think about how I wanted to portray Sleeping Bear Dunes using the sand itself as the material. No paint, no pigment, just sand. So I make this mixture with matte medium, which is just a type of, you know, acrylic paint without the pigment. And I make a drawing out of sand of, for instance, the Lake Huron locust. There's a wonderful tradition of using natural pigments from cave art through the earth artist of the 60s and 70s. So it's in that tradition.
You are there in Manhattan, Manhattan born. How did you get this tie to the Great Lakes?
Well, I have a fascination with ecology, and the Great Lakes are ground zero for the future in terms of fresh water. 20% of the Earth's fresh water is there, and it has a fascinating and dark history in terms of invasive species and exploitation. So when Dana Friis Hansen, the Grand Rapids Art Museum, asked me what my dream project would be, I immediately thought of the Great Lakes.
Well, you had to immerse yourself. Talk a little bit about, you know, the research. Who'd you talk to? What'd you see?
What I did first was I read some books about the ecological history. And then I asked the staff at the Grand Rapids Art Museum to come up with an itinerary. I'd like to meet with people that have a relationship to the lakes, and that could be academic, historians, anthropologists, fishermen. And I made a sort of loop from Grand Rapids, which is on the east coast of the Mitten, as it's called, to the Upper Peninsula, where I had a key number of meetings with two wonderful professors at the Northern Michigan University, one Jill Leonard, who is an ichthyologist. In about 20 minutes, I had all 5 paintings sort of planned out. As you go across the lakes geographically from east to west, the ones like Erie and Ontario have had the worst problems because not only are they the shallowest and have the least volume of water, they've been had the most exposure to humans. So what's going to happen to those lakes will eventually happen to Lake Superior if we don't really get ourselves together. We sat down and I made a series of rectangles and I said, all right, what are the big issues? I think the exploitation of resources. And she said, absolutely, but don't forget about mining and timber extraction and agriculture. So that became the painting cascade, the history of the fishing industry, the early Pleistocene glaciation. If you had a time machine and you went back 15,000 years, that would be an enormous ice sheet called the Laurentide Ice Sheet, would be covering most of North America. And as the ice sheet melted, it left a glorified puddle. And the glorified puddle are the 5 Great Lakes. The plants and animals and fish that live in these lakes are, you know, they're newcomers in terms of ecology. They're very ecologically naive. So when the Erie Canal was opened up, in the early 20th century, late 19th century, you started to see things that swam into the lakes from the Atlantic Ocean, like the sea lamprey, that decimated the fisheries. Mm. They're basically vampire tubes that have, you know, 2 eyes and they're a jawless fish.
Well, and that idea, sort of a tube with eyes, fits right into, well, you've called natural history psychedelia. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, the things that I've been attracted to over the years have been ideas about nature and life on this planet and geology. And scientists have been some of the greatest storytellers in terms of making sense of the world. But one of the things that's so exciting about being an artist is that you have an opportunity to make images, to create this sort of hybrid language that is natural history psychedelia. The history of life on this planet is psychedelic. It's almost hard to comprehend how exciting it is and how phantasmagorical things can be. The stories of extinction, of invasive species, some of the darker parts of human human legacy that have left not only humans doing things to humans, but humans doing to things to other life on this earth.
So how did she help you get to, you know, some of these huge paintings that I'm looking at? Here's one that looks like, well, there's an airplane. It's actually an airplane that crashed into Lake Michigan in 1950. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
What's that on the horizon?
There's a handful of boats that sort of walk you through the history of maritime travel, early Native American travel, the War of 1812, the early coal-burning vessels, and then you have a modern tanker on the right. So that's just a little bit of a timeline of boats on the Great Lakes.
We've reported quite a bit on invasive fish. You went out with a charter boat fisherman. You went to
yes.
the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum, an
yes.
abandoned copper mine.
Mm-hmm.
What did you personally take away from the people who live the lakes?
It's a unique place. I've done projects about Tasmania, Madagascar, Antarctica. The lakes are a fascinating legacy and really worthy of intense and enthusiastic study. So why not?
Well, beloved, by those who live there.
And abused by people that live around it. There's such a confused relationship to fresh water, especially.
Well, how did you know how to paint, for instance, type E botulism?
That's right there on the internet. It's not that mysterious.
Oh, really?
It's a rod, rod bacteria.
But in other cases, we understand you had to call, for instance, Jill Leonard and say, do you have pictures of a sick fish? I mean, what does a sick fish look like?
There was a period where I was going to have mutated fish with two heads and stuff like that. But that just ended up being a little too cartoony and not as interesting as what was really going on. I ended up using some metaphors of monstrousness, especially in Forces of Change. If you look at that octopus-like monster in the foreground
right.
of the Buffalo River, I thought, how do you show the powerful effects of not only geology, engineering, how do you show disease? I mean, disease is really this invisible thing. And so mm-hmm. I thought, why not use the wonderful metaphor of monstrousness and monsters, which is a fascinating thing to me in Western culture.
So you have this octopus-like monster and then...
The E. coli Kraken.
And then several... little things.
Viruses and bacteria, yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. Again, hereandnow.org, you got to see these extraordinary pictures. Water is not new to you. You mentioned you've done other water pieces, but also you worked with the director Ang Lee on the film Life of Pi. Again, this is a young man out on a boat. He's trapped with a tiger. How did your artwork help shape how that would look?
Well, I really didn't have much to add in terms of like the art direction or production design of an Indian city like Pondicherry, for instance. But I said, well, I have a lot of experience in ecosystems like mangrove swamps, and I know about the Sargasso Sea, even though I've never actually seen it myself, unfortunately. And I thought the island that Pi experiences is something I could really help with. The underwater sequence where Pi and the tiger, Richard Parker, come together and experience the world through a single vision, tiger vision, when they go to the bottom of the ocean and see this fantastic world, which wasn't in the script. I thought that was something I could really sink my teeth into and think about it in terms of, some of the great cinematic moments from film history, like the Stargate sequence from 2001 or some of the evolutionary sequences from Terrence Malick's Tree of Life. So I thought about it in the context of film history and, what could we do that had never been seen before?
Yeah. That's artist Alexis Rockman. What he did in The Life of Pi is phantasmagorical, and we'll post that scene at hereandnow.org. But Alexis, back to your collection at the Grand Rapids Art Museum in Michigan on the Great Lakes, also phantasmagorical, as we've been hearing, the paintings incorporate history, environmental issues, sand from one of the lakes. So the lakes are in the pieces. Are the lakes in you?
I have a tremendous fondness and affinity for the lakes, and I think they've been pretty neglected by America. And the freshwater issues that we're all going to face in the future, they're going to become crucial assets, more valuable than anything on Earth in the future.
That's Alexis Rockman. His exhibition, Alexis Rockman, The Great Lake Cycle, opens at the Grand Rapids Art Museum in Michigan in late January. Then it's going to travel the country for more, and again to see some of these pictures, go to hereandnow.org. Alexis, thank you.
The honor is mine.